Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, we're back with another fantastic episode as we enter the fall season over here. But we've got a great episode today. We've got a full episode as we break down a series that we've been talking about and looking forward to for what seems to be about 5 or 6 years. And that's why The Last Man. We're going to talk about the pilot and the pilot only. There's 4 episodes available on Hulu. It is a FX for Hulu exclusive, so spoiler warning to follow. But let's go right into the trailer park. Last week we did all Marvel, and I alluded to this wonderful movie, this little gift that was given to us last week. And that's The Matrix, the newest Matrix movie that's coming out, Matrix Resurrections. The creative team, the Wachowskis, it's only one this time. And it's Lana doing this one.
Yeah.
Keanu's back. Carrie Ann Moss is back. And then it's got a pretty good cast for us geeks that we know. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Jessica Henwick, Christina Ricci, you know, Priyanka Chopra Jonas, Jada Pinkett Smith, Neil Patrick Harris. It's got a pretty solid little cast. The trailer comes out. What did you think of this this trailer for, you know, usually on Christmas, we're talking about Star Wars. This year, yeah, we're talking about The Matrix, which is kind of crazy because, like, everything's kind of moving around, right? So all the movies, especially, you know, you and I were just talking about Ghostbusters, but most of the movies have been flip-flopping dates, right? This was supposed to come out on the exact same day as John Wick Chapter 4, and now it got pushed up earlier.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, with the climate of going on, you don't hear many movies getting pushed up that far. You hear every once in a while a movie get moved up a week or 2 weeks, but this was move up.
Yeah, it's about 5 or 6 months. It comes out December 22nd, 2021 on HBO Max and in theaters. So, you know, this Merry Christmas, we get to watch a Keanu movie from home. What did you think of this trailer? The choice is ours, the tagline is. The choice is yours. What did you think?
It looked great. I never expected to see another Matrix movie. I thought, you know, after the third one, it was done. But I really enjoyed the first Matrix. The second Matrix was good, and the third Matrix I didn't care for. So I was really pleased, surprised, but pleased when they decided to make a fourth one. This trailer looked great. I feel it didn't show a whole lot, so I'm fine with just seeing this trailer alone. We got to see a lot of stuff, especially the new Morpheus. We were talking, and I said, he's like a Morpheus-type character. And then, like, 10 minutes later, Yahya Abdul-Mateen came out and was like, no, I'm Morpheus. So it's pretty cool. He looks great. He's a great actor. You know, the trailer, it's a little not what I expected. You know, it looks like, you know, Mr. Anderson, Keanu Reeves, is back in the Matrix and doesn't know it. So I kind of see how that all plays out. And he's looks like, you know, he's seen a therapist with Neil Patrick Harris.
And blue and red pills.
Yeah. So it looks pretty cool. I'm glad it's the same creative team. You know, it's not someone else taking this IP and making it their own. It's the Wachowski, you know, now it's Lana. But, you know, it's her vision. And I'm glad that she's able to continue the franchise.
Yeah, I'm curious to see why Lily didn't sign on to it, but I did like the trailer. I thought the song to it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It really touched into the theme of everything with the pills. I like that, you know, we're getting more of a grizzled Neo. He's not the clean cut Neo anymore. No. I like that they're building onto the world and like they're getting trapped back into the Matrix. I thought like that it was more of like deja vu. When he saw Carrie Ann Moss, and then he was like, we got to go back to the Matrix, or welcome to the Matrix. I can't remember the exact line. Again, I'm with you. Like, I never thought that, you know, in 2021, we'd be seeing a Matrix movie. But Keanu's hot again. This was a movie that kind of revolutionized film when it came out. I'm curious to see what they do with this moving forward. So, you know, ideally, I'd like this to be the last one of the Matrix. I don't want this to go into another trilogy and we're 6 Matrix in. I prefer this to be the end, but we'll see. You know, Halloween went into a whole new trilogy, and I'm going to see the second one, so who knows with this one, but I'm excited about it. I am with you. I do like that one half of the creative team is still there with Lana Wachowski, or Wachowski, I'm sorry. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm going to see this at home. It's Christmas time. There's really no sense. You know, I got a lot of Christmas shopping to do, probably. I'm a last-minute shopper, so... I'll probably be out in the stores going crazy, but I'm going to see this at home, and we'll talk about it, of course, because, definitely. Anything with Keanu minus the Lake House, we will talk about. But let's go into the newsroom, because we've got a couple things that we'd like to talk about. Let's start with the rumor of a Penguin series being developed over at HBO Max, spinning out of the Batman. When I first saw the headline, I was like, that's awesome. I like that we're getting a whole Batman universe, and Matt Reeves is, you know, and DC are saying, like, we're keeping our word. But then I got a little weirded out, perturbed a little bit, when I saw that it's unlikely for Colin Farrell to return as the Penguin. So what did you think about the announcement of this and the fact that there's a chance that he's not going to come back and star in the role that he's playing in the movie?
It's a DC move.
Absolutely.
It, you know, the idea of having a universe connected to movies is great. You know, we've been wanting this for a long time, and Marvel, starting this year, started doing it. And so far, it's turned out really good. And we've said before, like, they can do that with DC. They have the IP. They have the storylines. They have a great, they have great ideas that they could work and bridge on. And when this was said, like, you know, they're going to do a Gotham PD show, and, you know, that's connected to the Batman. And then I was like, okay, that's great. Like, we're going to get connectivity, which is what we want. And then the Penguin, I was like, oh, awesome. Like, Colin Farrell looks great as the Penguin, and he's a great actor. He's not, I believe he's done, like, HBO shows before, so he's not, it's nothing new. So I was like, okay, this is perfect. And then when they were like, oh, he might not come back, I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, if they go and get anyone, just get Richard Kine, because it looks just like him.
Yeah. You're right. It is an absolute DC move. They can do a connective universe, but it doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, their universe is so scattered right now. The only way that they can connect anything is the Batman at this moment, because it seems like that's where they're putting all their focus in. We don't know what's going to happen with Flashpoint. We don't know what's going to happen in Wonder Woman 2, Aquaman, or Wonder Woman 3, Aquaman 2. Like, who knows where Batgirl and Blue Beetle fit into this? You know, there's so much going on. We got 17 Batman, and they're like, let's just do a Penguin series. It's very DC to just take any character and turn it into a, you know, a series. I like the move only if Colin Farrell's in it, because
100%.
What's the point of casting Colin Farrell to play this character in your big Batman movie only to have him out like a one and done character? That kind of changes the whole scheme in my mind of the movie. And there's rumors coming out of the Batman that, you know, Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson aren't getting along, so maybe this is the same thing with Colin Farrell, and he's like, listen, I don't like the director, or I don't want to wear that huge, like, the prosthetics. I don't want to be in the makeup chair forever, so we'll see. But I'm going to put that on, like, take it with a grain of salt until, like, they start shooting it. Another thing that's coming out, again, take it with a grain of salt, because, you know, Amazon's been saying they're putting out a Lord of the Rings series. They're developing a She-Ra live-action series coming to Prime. No cast, no idea of what's going on yet, no plot, no nothing, other than that it's happening. And the way I see it is, we can get a She-Ra series, but we can't get a He-Man series, live-action. I see where their priorities are. And She-Ra's great, got an animated series, which was, you know, not my cup of tea, because I feel like I'm 30 years too old for it. But I don't know where I sit with this move. This reminds me of the Powerpuff Girls move. Like, let's do a Powerpuff Girls live action. Like, what do you think about this?
I mean, I get it. You know, they want to empower women and have great female-driven storylines, which is great. I'm all for it. But she is a spin-off character of a greater universe. And you're not making anything with that greater storyline.
And I'm it's almost like it doesn't even matter at this point. No. It's like she's her own entity that started in her own series instead of spinning out of the Masters universe.
She's the brother or sister of He-Man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. Like, we've been talking about a movie or a series, a live action, something for years. And we thought we were going to know Santino or whatever his name is. And
Noah Centineo.
Centineo. And, you know, that fell through. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. Not in that entity. So, like, it kind of came at a surprise that they're like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, you know, Mattel's like, oh, yeah, we're selling it to
Amazon.
And they're going to do a live action series, which could be cool. Could be really great. But I want a He-Man series first.
Yeah, it would be pretty weird, but, like, this is a very... I mean, it's the reverse Uno card that Hollywood likes to play often, that, like, they're going to turn this into a She-Ra universe and He-Man spins out of it. Which, if that happens, okay, cool. Like, we get a He-Man, Amazon has enough money, and they put out good series that we could get, like, a legitimately good He-Man. And if that's the way they're going to go, like, here's She-Ra... Here's her brother, Prince Adam. And, like, you know, you cast a fairly decent name for Prince Adam, and then they spin out the He-Man that way. I think that would be a cool twist on something if that's the direction that they want to go. And if, you know, they connect it to the Kevin Smith anime on Netflix, just kind of like, which is more Teela-centered than He-Man, yeah. Then have at it. But it's weird because it kind of just reminds me of what we've kind of talked about in these series before, where you get a pre-established character that's spun out of a universe without setting the tone in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But speaking of universes, we're going to dive back into Marvel. Thought we weren't in this episode, but here we are again. A series that you and I have been talking about for what seems to be 2 years about it being canceled. And we keep calling it the defunct, not happening, you know, what could have been series. Marvel just said, guess what? We're putting it out. And it's coming out in November. I don't know if that means anything for Howard the Duck, but Hitmonkey is the animated series is coming out November 17th exclusively on Hulu. It's got Jason Sudeikis, George Takei, and Olivia Munn in it. The trailer looks great. The animation looks great. It looks better than MODOK. And for those of you who may not know who Hitmonkey is, the show follows a Japanese snow monkey aided by the ghost of an American assassin who goes on a revenge quest and becomes the famous killer of killers. That alone is an amazing premise.
Yeah.
So I'm going to watch this. What did you think about this wonderful announcement, this little gift that Marvel gave us this week?
Well, it surprised the hell out of me, and I text you, and normally you are ahead of every game. I text you, you're like, yeah, I saw it an hour ago.
But yeah, when you text me at work, there's no chance of me saying it anymore.
Yeah, and I saw it on my lunch break, and I was like, I got, you know, because we were just talking about last week how, like, it, you know, it fell back to the wayside for Marvel. And because, you know, they announced they were going to, all at one shot, they said they were going to do MODOK, Hitmonkey, Howard the Duck, and
I think Dazzler and Tigra.
Dazzler and Tigra, and then they were like, okay, all those are scrapped except MODOK. And then we got MODOK a couple months ago.
What a disappointment that was.
It was different.
It was terrible.
And then we were like, okay, that's all we're getting. And then Hitmonkey came out of nowhere. And I'm excited for it. It looks very cool. I don't know a whole lot about Hitmonkey.
Oh, you're gonna love Hitmonkey.
I mean, I know about him, and I know some stuff, but I've never read any of his comics. You know, I don't know the lore, but I know of Hitmonkey.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited. So, it looks really cool, and Jason Sudeikis is riding high off his Emmy win. So, you know.
Emmy wins, by the way.
Emmy, yes.
He won 2, they won 7, Ted Lasso, potentially the greatest show on television right now. Gonna put it out there.
And it spun off a commercial. Like,
it's, well, yeah, it spun off of an SNL skit, which is amazing. I've been high on Ted Lasso since it came out. It was honestly, I think it's the second thing I watched completely on Apple TV. And I watch it every Friday. I have Ted Lasso merch. it is my favorite television show, period, right now.
I haven't seen an episode. I hear good things about it.
Love everything about it. I follow the entire cast on social media. I have, like I said, I have merch. When I go to overseas next year, I'm doing the Ted Lasso filming tour. Like, I'm all about it. And Jason Sudeikis, like, I just, you know, when I saw the casting, his name stuck out. I like almost everything that he's done.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of, like, he kind of goes under the radar of how much I like him as an actor. He's extremely funny. And, like, I don't know if I've seen him in, like, serious movies, per se. But, like, his comedy and, like, his delivery is gold. So, he's up there as, like, one of my favorite actors right now. So, Hitmonkey, sign me up.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Let's go to my picks of the week. I will say, touch back on Primordial. You didn't get it. You need to, because it is amazing. So good. So good, that Primordial. And it's fun. I love the artwork. I love the story. It's a quick read. I think I read it in like 3 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's a lot of pictures and a lot of like just boop, 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 like, you know, panels everywhere. But let's go to my picks of the week. And I've got four. One from Image. And it's called Frontiersman. And it's written by Patrick Kinlan and art with Marco Ferrari. Patience, conviction, revenge. Team Patrick Kinlan and Marco Ferrari reunite for an all-new ongoing series at Image. Classic Green Arrow-style adventure blends with the thoughtfulness of concrete in a superhero odyssey for mature but uncynical readers. Frontiersman is coaxed out of retirement by an environmentalist group, only to find out that being a spokesperson makes him a target for old and new enemies alike, for the superhero reader looking for more. I want to read it. It sounds amazing. It's like a lumberjack superhero. It's like if Paul Bunyan worked for the EPA. So I'm going to give it a shot. I'm sure you're not going to give it a shot.
No, probably not.
You're like, no, the hell with this one. But here's one that you might, and it's from Marvel. We've been reading a lot more Marvel. You actually have been reading a lot more Marvel. Yes. That hasn't been canceled, surprisingly enough. But if you get this one, it might be, and it's called The Death of Doctor Strange. And I'm sure you've been seeing this in the ads for...
Yeah, I've seen all the ads for it.
Well, you knew it was going to make it on this list, and here it is. It's finally time. It's written by Jed McKay with art by Lee Garbett, and... Death comes for the Sorcerer Supreme. Dr. Stephen Strange is the world's greatest neurosurgeon and Earth's Sorcerer Supreme. He defends our planet from the supernatural and interdimensional threats no other hero is equipped to handle. But what would happen if he unexpectedly died? Who would protect the Earth and keep the mystical evils at bay? If it were the MCU, it would be Wong, but maybe he's not in this. And most importantly, who would kill Stephen Strange and who killed him? The final chapter of The Life of Doctor Strange starts here, by Jed McKay, who wrote some of the best Moon Knight and some of the best Black Cat, and Lee Garbett, who wrote, drew a lot of great Captain Marvel stuff. What do you think about this? Is this something that you're going to, you know, dive into and give it a read?
I think so. Like I said, I've been reading more Marvel. I've been liking more Marvel lately. And it does sound interesting, you know, that they're, you know, killing, quote-unquote, because... You know, no one's ever really dead.
You never die. Unless, no. I mean, unless you're, you know, the Hitmonkey series that we've been talking about for months.
Yeah.
And it's back.
You know, you never, like I said, you know, quote unquote, die in the Marvel Universe. So, but I would like to see who's behind it. It does sound pretty cool. And the, absolutely. I haven't seen much artwork, but the ad, the art looks really cool.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool. I think that's what stuck out for me. It's very trippy. It reminds me of like old 70s like peace and love posters, like hippie posters and like album art. So I'm here for it. Here's another one from DC. I don't know if you're going to get this one, but I put it on the list. It's called Aquaman, The Beginning. Jackson Hyde finally has it all. Mentors who support him, a community that loves him, and an honest relationship with his mother, a cute new guy in Amnesty Bay who's caught his eye, and access to Aquaman's private training facility in Atlantis. Well, he had it all until the training facility, and half the Atlantean palace got blown to the kingdom come with Jackson in them. Now Jackson stands accused of wrecking the life he worked so hard to build. Aqualad's going to need all of his skill, wit, and cunning just to prove his own innocence, let alone graduate from sidekick to Aquaman. You getting this one?
Probably not. I love Aquaman, the movie, but I haven't read many Aquaman stuff that I've liked lately.
I'm so curious, like, what happened to Calder? And, like you know, what happened to Garth? How many Aqualads are there? Like, I guess, you know, I think Jackson Hyde spun out of Future State, and I read the Aquaman stuff, and I know
didn't like it.
No, it was all right. They focused on his daughter a lot, and I would have thought that she was going to get a series, but Jackson gets his own series. I'm going to give it a shot just because I'm a big Aquaman fan. I like Caldor. So we'll see what Jackson Hyde has. But okay, let's enter spoiler territories. Those are my picks of the week. Get them or don't. It's not my money you're wasting. So let's get into this. We're going to go into the world of DC, more specifically Vertigo, as we talk about a book that you're familiar with by name.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with by actually reading all 60 issues. And I was talking to one of my clients who's a big comic book reader. And I asked him if he was familiar with this. And he said no. And he wanted to know where I stood with it. If I were to rank my favorite series that I've completed, this series hits top 10.
Okay. I mean, you've been talking about this for a very long time.
Yeah, and this guy writes two of my top 10 favorite series, and that's Brian K. Vaughan, and this is Why the Last Man is what we're going to be talking about. He also writes Saga, which is weird in its own right. This is more grounded, but
yeah.
This is a post-apocalyptic series that came out in 2002 and ran until 2008. It's a very successful comic run, 60 issues. It was monthly from issues 1 to 55 and then went bi-monthly from 56 to 60. Has, you know, kind of kept Vertigo going back then in the early 2000s. And it's spoiler territory again. It features, well, it centers around a young man named York Brown and his pet capuchin monkey, Ampersand, who are the only males left after a global androcide, meaning all the males died. And we finally got a series. It went from having, I think Barry Cohegan was going to be Yorick up until like 5 or 6 months ago, maybe a year ago. And he's going to be in Eternals, obviously. Now it went from Barry Cohegan to Ben Schnetzner, who I have no idea who he was. No. But we saw the trailer during the Disney Stakeholders event, and he ripped off his mask. And like that, it's a very iconic scene in the comic books. And I know you haven't read this, so we're going to specifically just talk about the pilot here. And I'm just going to kind of talk about my thoughts on the pilot without trying to go any further. I have to remember that, like, I've read all of this. I've watched all four episodes, so I don't want to spoil anything for our listeners. So when you heard the series comes out with pretty much just like one or two people that we know, like Diane Lane's in it, and great, I love Diane Lane. What did you think about the pilot itself?
Well, first, I mean, I remember years ago, it was supposed to be a movie with Shia LaBeouf, and DJ Caruso was supposed to direct it. It was like right after Disturbia, and they were like, oh, they're going to team up again, do Why the Last Man. I was like, okay. Like, so I looked in a little bit. I knew a little bit about it back then. And then nothing happened.
Yeah. Had he taken that role, like, had his life panned out the way it probably should have, and had he not gone through, like, all the, you know, the internal struggles and external struggles that he's gone through, I think Shia LaBeouf would have been a fantastic York. Like, looking back on it, like, character-wise in the comics versus even, like, Ben Schnetzner, who was really good in the pilot, he would have been great. He really would have.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like I said, I knew of Why the Last Man. I didn't read him, but I knew the storyline and stuff like that. So I saw the pilot. I did see the first three. So, but, like, again, we'll talk about the pilot. I liked it. It was a good start. You know,
I agree.
It told you, I mean, obviously it didn't tell you why this apocalypse happened, but it gave you a good, how can I put this?
Lead-in?
Yeah, very good lead-in. And like you said, a lot of the there's only two people that I recognize, and that was Diane Lane and Amber Tamblyn.
Yeah, who
I didn't even recognize her at first.
And she's not in it for a lot, honestly.
No, but she like I saw. I was like, oh, she looks kind of familiar, and I was like, wow, she looks a lot different than she did. And I just saw her in The Ring when she was a teenager, but it. It was very good. The cinematography is very good. I really like that. The you know the very post-apocalyptic world like. But I thought it was good. I thought it was a good pilot. It was intriguing. It was not one of those where like I watched the first episode and was like, eh. It was like, okay, I want to know more. I didn't love it, but I thought it was intriguing enough for me to continue it.
See. So you said you liked the post-apocalyptic vibe. I didn't get post-apocalyptic vibe because, it, like, what we watched is literally 3 days, you know, of normal time. Yeah. And then we watch, you know, all the men die. You know what I mean? So, like, it starts off with, like, all the, you know, I guess you can give it, like, a post-apocalyptic vibe with, like, the airplanes and the all, like, the disaster. You know what I mean? Well, like, all the bodies laying on the ground. I thought that that was a... When you look at, like, frames that stick out that are, like, iconic to series, like, you think of, like, The Walking Dead, right, where Rick's on the horse and he's riding down the highway and all the cars are abandoned or, like, he's standing on the tank. Like, that's an iconic scene from a series. I feel like one day, if this gets to the level of Walking Dead, and it might because the story's amazing, we're going to remember, like, the scene where, like, Yurik's ripping off his mask, looking at Ampersand, and there's like the plane or the helicopter on like the edge of that building. Or we're gonna get Hero covered in blood, like grieving as people are just losing their shit around her. Like that's gonna be like your iconic scene that stuck out.
Yeah, and then like I said, I mean, not to jump ahead of a couple episodes, but like really don't in that it. Episode when he was going around basically scourging for food, and. With the scene with him with the face mask on, the gas mask, that was really cool. You know, you just seen, like, bodies just laying. You know, he went inside a taxi cab, and then the dude just had blood dripping out of every orifice.
Yeah, like, you're looking at it from, like, the first scene. Like, so, to go back to the comic, right? The first comic is... They definitely took their, you know, creative liberties with this. I feel like they could have adapted the comic page for page during this first episode. But I think that they wanted to just give you an idea of which players are involved, right? So obviously they give you Hero. They give you York, Agent 355, Diane Lane, Senator Jennifer Brown. And then they give you, like, Christine, who we've seen her. She was in Jupiter's Legacy. She was one of she was the one who like teleported or like flew.
Oh yeah.
Her name is recognize her, but yeah, she's from Letterkenny and love her Letterkenny. And they also give you what's her name? Shit, I can't remember her name. Nora. They gave us Nora, who, you know, everybody it seems like it's so weird. Like everybody's male counterpart is a piece of shit in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like like the president's a dick. Nora's husband sucks. Diane Lane's husband sucks. York is poor and like thinks he's Chris Angel. Like all the guys kind of suck in this. Like the two guys who are like cooking meth in the house and then they blow up. All the men suck. So like they're painting it as like and Hero's boyfriend he sucks too. So they're like painting it as like all the men deserve this, right? So like they did a very like this is a very like. Feminist first episode, right? Like all the men suck, they all die. Let's see if women can run the world better. Like cue Beyonce and like who run the world, and that's like what you're getting. Like I'm surprised they didn't add that to it, but I'm
glad they didn't add
but that scene where Yurik is doing the magic escape act with the child in his apartment, minus the child, that's shot for shot from the comics. So I was like, oh, there we go. And but then you get like, so the comic starts off with Yurik on the phone with his girlfriend who's in Australia.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Okay. Not going back to Australia. So he's talking about how he loves her. They're like, I think they're Skype, or like his girlfriend's like running through like the outback, like on rocks and like in like Aboriginal land, right? So like she's like doing her thing and Yurik's doing his escaped art and like everybody dies. And I'm like, I wanted that to happen, but I, you know, they have to do their civil liberties, or not their civil liberties. That's a whole nother podcast. They do their creative liberties. I feel like they started off just a tad bit intense by giving everybody like such a like cloudy backstory. You know what I mean? Like, we know how they should have started was like introduce the Browns. Yorick, Hero,
yep.
Jennifer, right? And at the end, introduce Agent 355 because she's a huge character in this.
Dude,
but that should have been the end.
She is my favorite character.
She gets better. She's going to get so much better. She was one of my favorite characters in the story. She's great, and I think Ashley Romans is going to crush it.
Oh, she's the three episodes I saw, she already crushed it.
Yeah, she's great in the fourth one, too. But, like, when she's just jogging away and the house blows up in the first episode, I'm like, yes, come on. This is awesome. Dude,
I didn't see that coming because, like, I don't know anything about this series. Yeah. So, you know, we see her scumbag, quote-unquote, boyfriend, and she's making a bomb.
Yep.
And it seems like, I don't know if I missed it, but it was like, they were KKK, right?
Yeah, they weren't the greatest of people. They were definitely a hate group with ties to the KKK.
Because he was like, you cannot be here because you're black.
Yeah, they were like the Proud Boys.
Yeah. And so, like, she's like, okay, I made you this bomb. Here you go. I was like, oh, wow. Who is this chick? Like, it's kind of weird.
And then it blows up.
And then, yeah, so she's in the room and she's like, looking. Okay, they're there. And then she runs out of the room. I'm like, okay, where is she going? And she just, you know, escapes out of the back window, running down the street like she's taking a leisurely jog, and it blows up. And I'm like, oh.
And didn't even react. Like, that just shows you how badass she is, right? Even the movies that we've seen where, like, even, like, the most badass characters, when they're walking away from an explosion, they flinch a little bit. She just kept going. So, like, it's going to evolve, like, to just how badass she is. But, like, even, like, one of the things that I really enjoyed about this was that they kind of led you to, like, they led you into how everything's dying, right? It started with the rats and the birds and, you know, the deer. And, like, all the animals were starting to die. Like, that scene where they're in the middle of the city and all the rats are running.
Yeah.
Like, super intense. And all the cat, like, all the male ones die. The scene with the dog was heartbreaking. As the dog's like coughing up blood, like that was sad. And the buck being dead was sad too. But what was really cool, and I like how they played this off in the finale, or the pilot, I'm sorry, was when all the men died. At one point, they didn't say anything. The women who were in the Oval Office, right? They didn't say anything, and they looked at each other, and it looked like they all just kind of put it together. Like Diane Lane looked at, you know, Agent 355 and looked at Christine, and they were like, you're noticing what I noticed. So I thought that was very cool. I have something that I would have changed and something I didn't like, but that's more of like nitpicking because of the comics. Was there anything that you didn't like about this?
The pilot? No. I really enjoyed it. Like, it was, like I said, it wasn't like, oh my God, it's the best show ever, but it was like, it drew me in enough to be like, okay, I want to finish this. Like,
yeah,
I want to see where it goes. Because, you know, we've talked about it before. We've watched pilots and first episodes, and we're like, okay, no, this isn't for us.
Yeah, it definitely found the right home.
Yeah, no, like, definitely.
FX on Hulu is much more different than FX on FX.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you can stretch, you know, you stretch those bills at Farmer Mills, right? You can stretch the limits a little bit more on FX on Hulu. And I think that this would have, like, if this would have been on, like, TNT or USA or just even Hulu itself, I think it would have been dead in the waters. I don't think it would have translated as it should have, because this is a dark story, and it's going to get darker once you kind of dive into, you know, the deeper mythos of the world. The one thing I didn't like about this is how they're portraying Hero. They made her seem like the girl from Jupiter's Legacy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she's a dirtbag, drug addict, alcoholic who's like just, you know, doesn't live up to her name, Hero. And like there's tones of that in the story, but they're painting her like as like this feeble character who in the pilot alone, like of all the characters, I hated her the most.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Olivia Thirlby. That's another character that I recognize that I forgot about. I mean,
she's been in a lot.
Oh, yeah. She was great in Dread.
Yeah, she was.
I agree. Like, they're painting her out to be unlikable.
Yeah, and, like, she was one of my favorite characters in the story. And, like, I was excited to see, because she, again, somebody I knew, I was excited to see her, like, stretch her legs on this. And I was like, ooh, I don't like what you're doing with Hero right now. And I'm assuming we're going to get better. You need to have, like, somebody that you don't root for in this. And, like, I feel like everybody, like, they're painting it as you should root for Yurik, obviously, because he's severely outnumbered in this world of all women. And it's just him and, you know, Ampersand. But I don't think they called him Ampersand in the show, in the pilot, did they?
I don't know about the pilot, but they do. I think the third episode he does, but
yeah.
I don't think he calls him Ampersand in the pilot.
A little disappointed in that. Like, you need to establish why this cute little capuchin monkey, what his name is, and you have to make sure that you know that it's a boy. But overall, I'm excited about the series. I'm glad that they get, like, I'm glad that the shows are doing, like, the first three episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, how many times have we talked about a show, right? Or a book, comic book in general, and said, like, I'm going to give it, like, two or three reads and see if I really like this, right? Shows can fail off of the first watch. You know how many people, and I think you're one of the people that watched, like, the first episode of The Walking Dead and was like, this isn't for me, and then went back to it later. I know so many people who are like, I watched the first episode and I hated it, and then everybody got on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it wasn't The Walking Dead, but I've done stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like
Lucifer.
Yeah, exactly, Lucifer.
I did it with Lucifer. I watched like the first, what, maybe, I think I watched the first season. I was like, it's not for me. And now I went back during the pandemic, watched it, loved it, and now I'm almost done the series. So
yeah, the only good thing about the pandemic is it gave us time to catch up on shows, right?
Yeah,
but like shows could live or die with just like the first episode, because think about this, man. There's so many shows on television right now that you have to be in a epidemic to watch everything that you want to watch.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You have to sacrifice if you want to be an active geek like you and me. You got to sacrifice your life, not like suicide, but like you got to sacrifice your free time. Maybe let's word it that way. I don't want to start people thinking like I'm starting the AGP cult, but if this was bad on the first watch, I guarantee a lot of people would tune out, right? So they give you two more, and they're like, here, you're really going to like this. So I think that was a smart play, which kind of leads me to a little bit of a TED Talk, if you don't mind. I want to get on a soapbox, because as I'm watching this, and like I was thinking about it today, like where do I stand with like the time that we're in as far as like entertainment and comic books being adapted? Because everything's being adapted, right? Everything that we read is being adapted. So I love that we are in a time where we are getting such great stories adapted and experienced by a larger audience, right? Because without that audience, people aren't going to go back to the comics. We get such a larger audience that, like, bigger than what they would have been available if they were to go in comic book form, right? You know, because, like, this was 2002. You have to spend easily over $100 to read the whole series. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you're not buying single issues. You got to buy the hardbacks now at this point. So we get these great stories like this, Why the Last Man, The Old Guard, Sweet Tooth, which are already adapted and we love. And then we get stuff like Killadelphia, Something is Killing the Children, Farmhand, and Straight Dogs, which are being adapted. They're in talks of being adapted. On the other side, though, And I don't want to sound like a gatekeeper, but you can call it what it is. But on the other side, I don't like the fact that a great story can suffer because of the risk of adapting it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. We've seen that before. We've seen stuff being adapted. It's like, it's not as good as the original.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be multiple. There are multiple risks in not just adapting it, right? Because you're running into, like, if you don't adapt it, you don't read it. You have to worry about casting. You got to get the right person. You have to worry about the writers and the directors who may not get the story or the vision of the creator, right? We're seeing that with Todd McFarlane, right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Where Spawn, iconic character, not being adapted properly. You have to deal with, like, the network roulette and make sure that the right network picks it and the right time slot where you can have, like, a cool comic book story like Jupiter's Legacy and or the October Faction turn into what we saw when they went to Netflix. Or you get a great character like Constantine get ruined because NBC thought Friday at 10 o'clock was the perfect time slot for the comic book version of Grimm. You know, and Supergirl, they didn't know what to do. When CBS got that, they lost their shit, and they're like, we're going to make it the best show ever, and lasted 12 episodes. I'm conflicted, but, like, as a comic book fan, I love that books are getting a chance, but sometimes they get me worried when I hear about adaptations. You know what I mean? Especially, like, these books that are, like, 6 or 8 issues in, and they're like, let's make it a series, because it doesn't give the series enough time to develop and the characters enough chance to grow. But that's my TED Talk. That's my soapbox. I'm going to put it away because, you know, everything, you know, I want to interview these creators. And at some point, something that Steve Orlando wrote or writes is going to be adapted, and I want to have a chance to talk about that. But do you get my point?
No, definitely. I mean, you know, in the past 5 years, that is the hot commodity in Hollywood, is doing these comic adaptations. And these aren't superheroes. We're not talking, call me wrong, but it might have started with The Walking Dead. And, you know, is this a comic adaptation that was made into a series and took off? You know, it's not about capes and cows and superheroes and supervillains and stuff like that. And there's a lot, you know, a lot of times people that don't read comics don't understand that. They think comic books are Batman, Superman, Spider-Man.
You know? Yeah.
But comics are so much more than that, or these artistic storylines and drawings as well that are great. And a lot of people, you know, I would say in the last 5-6 years are really coming around. And that's where all these people, like, Hollywood's like, oh, you know, we need to make these adaptations and all this. And it's great and it's not great at the same time. So I do agree with you.
Yeah, because I feel like the vision from comic book creators, like, kind of changes now, where they have to take that into account. Like, this could get adapted. Like, think about something like Prodigy, right? Mark Miller, 6 issues. Mm-hmm. It's getting a series. It's getting a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
You have, again, the two or three that I mentioned, Killadelphia is still active. I think that's like 16 issues in. The same thing with Something is Killing the Children. There, I think there's only 12 issues of Farmhand. That's being adapted into a series. Stray Dogs came out last year, being adapted into a series. Luther Strode, a comic that 90% of comic book readers have never heard of, is being adapted. And it's great that, like, it bolsters these unknown IPs and gives these writers a chance to kind of get bigger opportunities and pad their wallet a little bit. But at what point does it get to a point where the casual comic book reader or just the casual moviegoer says, that comic sounds pretty cool, I'll wait till it comes out on a movie? You know what I mean? We can't just rely on comics to be adapted to movies to keep comics in store, like, keep the comic book industry thriving. Like, you have to recognize these good stories, and the possibilities are endless in the books as opposed to being on screen. So, like, if you like Sweet Tooth, go back and read the books or try the next chapter of Sweet Tooth. If you like The Old Guard, pick up the new book. Like, that's why when these stories are being adapted, they're saying, like, oh, we're bringing back more Jupiter's Legacy. If you liked it, read this. So if you really like it, go and pick up the new books instead of saying, like, I'll wait till season two. Like, there's, I don't know. It's me being a passionate comic book fan that I expect everybody to read the book and the source material. And I know that's kind of too much to ask. But, like, also, I don't want people to be like, I don't like comics. I'm not a Batman fan. But tell me how much they love Sweet Tooth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not know that, like, oh, it's a comic book. Like, without the comic book, we wouldn't have that great series. So, I don't know. Maybe it's gatekeeping. Maybe it's just me being protected of a genre and an industry that I love. But that's my TED Talk. Again, putting the soapbox back. I brought it out again. We didn't do any notes for this episode, so no. I'm putting you on the spot. Geek Grader, what did you give the pilot?
7.8.
You said 8?
7.8.
Wow, that's a high pilot for you. I went 7.3. That's my personal bias showing when it comes to Hero. But as the series progresses, the rating goes up. And I highly suggest this to anybody listening who has Hulu. If you don't have Hulu, do a 7-day trial and watch the whole series. It's going to be great. I think this gets a season two. And the fact that they're doing it with lesser known actors, mm-hmm. I think is great, because we get a chance to enjoy the story and not judge it based on who's starring in it. You know what I mean?
No, definitely.
So 7.8 for you, high praise. 7.3 for me. And that's it, man. We're going to get out of here. That's Why the Last Man. Next week, we're coming back and we're talking more TV. We're talking Doom Patrol season 3. We're going to talk about the pilot. If there's 3 episodes, fuck it. We'll do all 3 episodes this time. But follow us on social media, The Active Geek Podcast. Listen to Galaxy Wars every Monday. Listen to Cage My IQ every single day. Follow Chuck on Instagram, Chuck_TheActiveGeek. Again, we will be back next week with season 3, Doom Patrol. How many episodes are available by next Wednesday? You should watch, because we're going to spoil them. Thank you for listening to this episode. Watch Why the Last Man. For The Active Geek Podcast, I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.